You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based podcast that spotlights Black women who replace silence with storytelling around pregnancy and infant loss and infertility. Black women experience miscarriage and stillbirth 4 to 5 times more likely than white women, according to the NIH and CDC. Whether you've experienced a miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, are trying to conceive, or have an infertility diagnosis, you will learn about resources and strategies to heal, gain clarity, peace, hope, and find an empowering path forward after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee, and you will hear me interview sisters in loss who have healed from such a painful and traumatic experience by sharing their testimonies and stories to inspire and help others turn their pain into their purpose. Now let's get started.
Welcome, Shauna, to the podcast.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So I would love for you to share a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay. So my name is Shauna Williams. I am the mother of 4. I have 2 angel babies and I have 2 rainbow babies. Well, a rainbow and a pot of gold, as they say. And you may hear them in the background. I apologize for that. I'm a wife. And I also am a owner of a business in which I provide birth and counseling services integrated, SW Doula. And I do that work centering the needs of parents who are experiencing pregnancy after loss, particularly Black parents. But I really serve anyone within the realm around that sort of situation who might also have had some trauma or challenges along their birthing process that's really manifesting in anxiety or emotional unwellness during subsequent pregnancies. I'm also a PhD student, and I am in my dissertation process, and my research is on the experiences of Black mothers during pregnancy after loss. So I'm so excited to be talking with you today about my own story, and maybe I can offer a little bit about the work that I do.
No, absolutely. We would love to hear about the work that you're doing. So take us back on your journey to motherhood and share with us your loss story.
Yeah. So my husband and I got married in 2011. We had this beautiful destination wedding in St. Lucia. And I often say we had such an amazing wedding because we were about to go through a really hard time and didn't know it. But we planned, and I'm a planner, and we planned out when we were going to have our child. And I got pregnant as planned a year after our wedding. And I was at that time in the best shape of my life. I wasn't quite 30. So that was exactly what I wanted. And I was exercising a lot, eating really healthy. And I had done a little bit of research since I was already on a health and wellness journey around healthy birth. So I knew I wanted to work with a midwife that felt like a good fit for me. And the midwifery practice I worked with, they were constantly complimenting me on, oh, we wish other mothers were so focused on wellness during their pregnancy, you're doing great. And I was just glowing. I had some nausea, but other than that, no other complications. And everything seemed to be perfect. And then it was the morning of the day I was about to go get my anatomy scan, my 20-week scan. And right before we went to the hospital, I noticed that the baby seemed to be in an odd position. And we had already named our little one Christian. But I said, you know, I told my husband, Christian's like in a weird position and I'm trying to stretch and get comfortable. And the baby doesn't seem to be moving much. And we got to our appointment and they were doing the ultrasound. And I had already had one ultrasound prior to that. And I just knew her mannerism, the ultrasound tech's mannerisms were so different. She just laid a towel over me and said, I'm going to get the doctor, and left. And that was all she said. And I looked at my husband and I said, something is wrong. That is not the way they act in an ultrasound. And he said, well, we don't know. And, you know, he had looked at the screen and said, is the baby sleeping? And she hadn't answered his question. So both of us were wondering, but he just was saying, you know, let's just hold off And the doctor came in, and my appointment was shortly after Christmas Day. And so he asked me over the holiday, had I noticed any sort of contractions or any sort of bleeding? And I've never been pregnant before, so I didn't know what a contraction felt like. And I said, I don't think I had anything. And no, I didn't have any bleeding. And he said, okay, well, I need to tell you that the baby's heart stopped and the baby probably died on Christmas Day, which I don't know why he gave me that additional piece of information. But it was something that lingered in my healing process. But after that, it was like a whirlwind. I just broke into a million pieces. I was so devastated, and my husband was devastated. And they boomed us into another room and talked to us about our options. And then was like, we're going to let you go home and think about it. And I couldn't make the decision on what to do. I was just so broken. So I just told my husband that whatever decision he made was fine. And he asked the midwife, and she said many parents had found it healing to give birth, to deliver their babies and hold their babies and have a funeral for their babies. And so my husband said, if that's what's going to help her, that's what we'll do. And so on December 28th, 2012, I went into the hospital and delivered my baby, and the hospital handled it beautifully. They put a marker up on my door to let people know that I was a bereaved mother. Every nurse who came in was like, I'm so sorry. My midwives were with me from the moment I got there till the moment my baby was born. The birth was pretty short. They gave me some medication to induce me. Baby was born. They offered me the chance to have him baptized, and we did that, and I got to hold Christian. My mother was able to come up and be with me during this process, my husband and I. And then afterwards, we had a small funeral. The social worker at the hospital came in and told me about a funeral home that provided free services for families whose babies had died. And so I was able to have him cremated, and we had this funeral service. We decided not to do an autopsy. There was nothing. They did plenty of testing on me. Nothing that they found told us what happened. We never knew. And the doctor said, 50% of the time, we never actually know, which was shocking to me. But during the funeral service, we were so fortunate. My pastor, unfortunately, had a loss at the same exact time of gestation of my baby. His wife had that several years prior. So during our funeral service, he did an amazing sermon where he told everyone what to say to us and what not to say to us. Shortly after he sat down, one of my relatives got up and pretty much said everything he said not to say. But at that point, I was just so thankful that he was there and my family and friends got to be there. We had our baby's pictures in the funeral program. So that was really, I was glad that that was the way that we got to lay Christian to rest. And what I didn't realize was that was only the beginning. I went through several months of a really deep sadness and depression. And my husband also had a really hard time. But as we started to come out of that, we started to talk about trying again. And our doctors told us when we could start to try again. And I wasn't sure about it, but I figured let's go ahead and do that. And so we tried again, and I was able to get pregnant fairly quickly, but still within the time limits that the doctor said was a good time to try again. And my baby, my second baby's due date was actually the day that Christian was born. So that was pretty shocking. But for me, I felt it was confirmation. I felt like God was giving me back everything I had lost. And although I was a little worried, I felt so confident that this was my blessing. Everything was okay now. And so much so that my husband and I even started calling the baby Rainbow. That was just what we called the baby, Rainbow, Rainbow. And everything was okay. And then about 7 to 8 weeks in, I started to just get this emotional feeling that something wasn't right. My pregnancy symptoms had started to subside a little bit, which people thought was a good thing, right? I wasn't nauseous, but I was worried about that. But everyone was saying it was good. I wasn't nauseous anymore. So I thought I was just going crazy. But one night I said to my husband, something is wrong. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it, but I just know something is wrong with my baby. And he was like, well, let's just see. We're not sure. We went in for an ultrasound at 9 weeks, and the baby had stopped growing at 8 weeks. And so we were given our options again, and we decided to have a D&E. And so that was a surgical birth for a Rainbow. And the doctor just said to us, the baby just wasn't developing correctly, and that anyone would have had a miscarriage. But for me, I was at this point, after Christian had died, I was really broken and sad. But after my second baby, I was really angry. I was just really angry. And I was like, okay, God, why does this keep happening? So I wasn't sure about trying again. At that point, I was kind of like over it. I said to my midwife, would you do this again after all we've been through? And she didn't give me an answer, but she held space for me. And then we decided to tentatively sort of just see what happened, but not officially try. We instead decided to look at other options to grow our family. And we started through the process of becoming a foster parent. And while we were in that process, my brother-in-law and his sister-in-law, my brother and sister-in-law, they're both in the military. They got deployed and they asked us to care for their daughter. And so my three-year-old niece came to live with us, and we stopped the process of the home study because we were focused on caring for her. And then while she was with us, we discovered we were pregnant again. And I was so fortunate she was with us because she kept me really distracted and focused on her. And I wasn't overly nervous, but it was hard for me to feel attached to this baby. And so I really didn't do any childbirth education. I didn't really plan much. I kind of just let this pregnancy be what it was. I didn't want a baby shower. I announced really late. I didn't announce at all on social media. And we went through the labor process, and my labor didn't go quite the way I wanted it to. I felt a lot of shame and sadness about the way that it went. I didn't have the same birth team that I had wanted when I was really planning with my first baby. But when my son was born, he was healthy. And I was so exhausted after delivering this baby that it took me a little while to feel attached. It took me about maybe a good 24 to 48 hours. But after that, once I started to really just be present with him, I fell in love. And that was my Rainbow baby, Micah, who you probably just heard in the background, sitting outside my door yelling. And it's been such an amazing journey parenting him. And I'm aware now of how nervous I really was during that pregnancy and how I really avoided any triggers and avoided any support. But caring for him has been a joy. When he was 2 years old, he was diagnosed with autism. And that has added to our understanding of who he is and how we raise him. But I really think about the way that I took in that information was really informed by my loss experience, because I thought to myself, well, he's not going to die, so I can deal with this. And so that was how I processed it. And then my husband and I, again, were like, should we try again one more time? I don't know. And I said, well, this time I was in a different place. After my previous experiences, after my not so great birth experience with Micah, also after Micah was born, I had a hard time going back to work. I had a lot of depression and sadness, and I did seek therapy for postpartum depression. I had some challenges with breastfeeding, and I got a lot of support around that. So by this point, I was pretty active. I had become a doula. I had started to support parents around breastfeeding and was pretty active in my community around that. So I decided I'm going to be different during this pregnancy when I suddenly became pregnant again, a surprise. I really focused on having the birth team I wanted. I decided to look up a specific sort of childbirth education that was going to be helpful for parents who were particularly nervous and anxious during birth. So that for me was hypnobirthing. And I took that process and I got a midwife and I planned a home birth and a doula and I was ready to go. But I had some unforeseen complications. Less anxious during this pregnancy. I still was pretty anxious. I was still pretty worried, but I hadn't been worried about my own medical well-being. And I was surprised when suddenly my blood pressure shot up out of nowhere. My midwife suspected something was going on, but I was getting concurrent care with the OB and they did not notice it. So at 38 weeks, I had to be induced and I gave birth to my pot of gold, my second little rainbow baby, Jiraiya. And I had ongoing complications. I ended up almost having to be rehospitalized because my blood pressure did not go back down right after he was born. But now he is 18 months old. And I am just so aware of how those experiences of being pregnant after a loss were for me. The experience of healing on my journey, it really just inspired me to offer more support for parents. And so all of my children really inform the work that I do now. I was already a therapist when I first became pregnant, and I already was working with people with a lot of trauma in their history. And I had already integrated that into my work as a doula and a lactation care professional. I was already targeting parents who had a trauma history. And so when I decided to go full-time into my business, I really wanted to focus in on a specific population. And parents who are pregnant after having the experience of loss, I had met so many of them in my work as a doula and in my early work as a therapist. And I knew that that was who I wanted to serve because I could really identify with that journey.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I love, love, love it. So let's talk about that transition to become a doula, because really being able to heal yourself, but being able to apply that to heal and work with others is the next level of healing, like I like to call it, because it's such a different experience. And some of the things that you may not know were triggering to you comes up during the pregnancy, during the labor process, supporting people postpartum. So really share with us, you know, the decision to become a doula, and then how you really have, you know, work with your professional background in therapy to integrate that into your practice as a doula.
Yeah. So one of the things that I really fell back on after I had my first loss was I needed answers. And I'm a research person. I need to know what is going on here. And as I was looking through the research, there were a couple of factors that were considered high risk for having a stillbirth. And I had none of them except being Black. And I said, well, what does being Black have to do with stillbirth? What is happening here? And as I, you know, asked some folks, no one could really give me any answers. And so I started to look into what is happening for Black women in birth. And I started to find out more about the Black maternal health crisis in our country. And as I started to do that work, I was also looking into breastfeeding supports. And there's also disparities around Black women and breastfeeding. And I wanted to know what is happening for Black women, what is helpful. And every piece of research I came across said something about doulas. And I knew that there was one person in particular who was a doula trainer who was specializing in this work, whose name I had come across frequently too, Mama Shafia Monroe. And I got the opportunity to attend a training with her. And so I went for research purposes. I actually went as part of a research project in my doctoral program. And my goal was just to see what do doulas do, right? And what's so special about what they offer, and do a small research paper around that. And when I went, after about 2 days with Mama Shafia, I was like, I am a doula. I never knew. And I don't know how to do this, but I just have to make this work. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. And so while I was with Mama Shafia, she worked with all of us in training to think about what special skills did we bring? How could we really bring out our own gifts from our ancestors in being a doula? And I knew for me, I already had done work as a therapist. I already was teaching. I was a professor at that point, teaching young social workers. I had worked with really vulnerable populations. And I said, okay, well, that's who I need to target then. People who are going to be more at risk of having some of these emotional health challenges. And so when I started that work, that was something that I kept in the back of my mind, but it was not hard to come across Black women who had history of trauma, Black women who had history of loss, Black women who had had history of a previous traumatic birth experience. They were around me everywhere. And so every bit of the clients that I gave in some way, shape, or form, the clients that I encountered, they had some flavor of their story that I saw was manifesting in different ways in their pregnancy. And I was able to really hold space for them around that. And I did that, and I do that through a couple of different things. There is some counseling techniques that I use. I really did a lot of reading around supporting trauma survivors in birth, like Penny Simpkins' book, When Survivors Give Birth, was something that I read a lot and really used in all of my work. And I really helped my clients think about, what does your birth plan look like when these are triggers for you, when these are emotional challenges for you, when these are areas of concern for you? How do we make sure that your needs are being met by your birth team? And then what can I do as a doula to support you in the moments where you're struggling? So I've had clients who were saying, you know, I don't want to be too uncovered during birth. That's triggering for me. I don't want certain sorts of cervical exams at certain points during my birth. And so helping them identify that and hold space for that. I've had clients who have experienced a loss and then had a second circumstances that mirror the first loss come up in their second pregnancy, and they're just frozen with fear. And so helping them process through that. I've also had clients who are having their first baby. Maybe they have had some infertility challenges and find out along the way that their baby has passed away unexpectedly. So holding space for them around finding out that news and helping them think through their options and even just their options for emotional care. And that's really been the way that I have approached this work. And in thinking about pregnancy after loss, a lot of my clients are coming through and they're just very anxious from the beginning to the end. They're very anxious. They are afraid to be attached to this baby. They are struggling with going to appointments, going to that ultrasound, going to that non-stress test is another trigger. And so helping them make sense of what's happening medically and advocate for themselves medically, but also calming their body so that they can cope with what's happening and know that this is why it's so hard whenever you walk into the doctor's office. This is why your chest gets tight when they turn on that ultrasound machine. This is what's happening in your body, and here's how you can calm your body because that helps you and helps your baby as you go through this process. But you're not strange. There's nothing wrong with you. A lot of my mothers have been told, you should be happy. You're having a baby now. It's going to be okay. Why are you still worried? You should be all right now. And helping them understand, no, you loved your baby. And it is normal that you would be nervous that this could happen again. So let's learn how we can cope with that in a way that doesn't feel so challenging as you navigate this pregnancy after loss journey.
Amen, girl. That is exactly what we do in those circumstances. So thank you for explaining and sharing all of that. So I would love for you to talk about some of your research that you've done, especially as you're working towards actually fighting for your dissertation. You're actually going to defend it and everything. So really share with us some of your research around some of the numbers that we see. I think that a lot of us see these numbers and it brings up some heightened anxiety and fear in us about what could happen or what could occur in, hospital settings when it comes to us trying to give birth safely and bring home a happy baby and us come home as well.
Yeah, thank you. It is definitely a fight. I'm still very, very early in my dissertation process. I'm still proposing my research. But a lot of what I have spent a good amount of time looking at is historical aspects of why the situation with Black women birthing in this country exists the way it does. And it's important to know, what's on the news is that there's a disparity and Black women are at risk and Black babies are at risk, which is true. But it's important to know that this is not new. Since we have been in this country, brought here against our will and enslaved, there has been a gap between the way that our outcomes look as it relates to birth and as it relates to having healthy babies live to their first birthday. However, white women were also struggling in the same way. There just wasn't as much medical care. There wasn't as much knowledge around germs and how to keep everyone safe. And so the medical industry of obstetrics really was based around experimentation on Black women's bodies. So not only were we experiencing loss of ourselves and our children at a higher rate, the cure or what was supposed to save us was being tried out on our bodies without pain medication. And so we had this interesting dynamic as Black women where we, on one hand, needed more care and needed more support, but the people who were giving that to us, we did not trust them. And so that history developed over time into where we are today. And actually the disparity between the gap between Black women and white women's birthing outcomes is even wider today than it was during while we were enslaved. And so that is very concerning. But what I really love for Black women to hear is that often we become so concerned about being Black that, oh, there's something about Blackness that is what's causing this. And I've even heard medical providers say, I had a doula client who her doctor said, you need to take this medication. And she was asking me about it. And I said, well, why did your doctor say you needed to take it? She said, oh, well, the doctor said I needed to take this because I'm Black. And I said, well, what kind of pill is going to treat Blackness? Like, that doesn't make any sense. It has been studied over and over again. We have looked at women who are Black from, who are not from America and compared their rates to ours. And it is clear that it is something about what's happening to Black American women. If it was about us being Black, our African sisters would see the same rates, and they don't. Their birth outcomes are better. But when they come to the United States within one generation, their birth outcomes and maternal mortality and infant mortality rates look like Black Americans. There is something about American racism that is killing us and killing our children. And that is what I like to let women know, that it is not them. It is the medical system. And now that we know that, we now have the tools to save ourselves and save our communities. Part of that is about making sure Black women's voices are centered when it comes to making decisions around what needs to happen. I was so amazed and happy and excited to see you, Erica, talking with Vice President Kamala Harris around maternal mortality, because that's what we need to see. And the government is making these decisions. We need to see Black women who have had these experiences centered and their voices in the middle of what needs to happen. I'm so thankful for the work of the Black Maternal Health Caucus and the Black Momnibus bill that has been put out. We need to support that. And that is one thing that we can be doing at a macro level to really change our outcomes. The other thing is that I encourage Black women to know your birth team. Know that you don't have to just take the OB that accepts your insurance, that there are more options out there. You can be making sure that it's the right OB for you in your practice. If you bring in your birth plan, if you tell them you're bringing a doula and they are upset about that, that gives you insight into the fact that they're not really willing to listen to you and your needs. And be okay with saying, I will not accept that. Black women need to be open to other options too. This long history we've had with the medical industry still leaves us in this place where we view it as they're the experts. And that's the way American culture views it. Doctors are experts, but there are multiple people who are well-versed in birth. And so we should be considering working with midwives. We should be considering looking at birth centers. We should be considering home birth. And we can also have a doula there who can support us through the emotional aspects of making these decisions and having the birth outcome that we hope to have. And also knowing that emotional wellness is just as important as our physical health. So when Black women do things like engage in support groups, when they engage in prenatal yoga, when they are going to childbirth education, when they are joining in acupuncture and all these, and Reiki and all these different things that can be healing for our bodies, and herbs and things, and the way we're eating and nutrition, all of those things are working towards improving our outcomes. And so that's what I really like for women to know. And because we know that pregnancy loss happens more frequently to Black women, disproportionately so, stillbirth, miscarriage, infertility, all of those are challenges that Black women experience at disproportionate rates, then there should be more research around what that experience is like for Black women. There's not enough research around pregnancy loss And even less about pregnancy after loss experiences. But a lot of that research really centers white women's experience and their voices. And that is not a bad thing. I'm glad that we are looking at pregnancy after loss. But when Black women, when you layer on the fact that we're experiencing this disproportionate experience in the birth experience in medical hospitals, when we look at what Black people are experiencing on a daily basis in this country, when we look at how Black women are who are giving birth to these babies, what we're worried about our babies are going to experience when they're growing up, all of those things have to be taken into account, that our experiences may be different. And so our care needs to be different. And that doesn't just mean medical care, it also means what emotional well-being resources are available to us, and what kind of things should doctors be holding space for and midwives be making space for when we're being seen in the birth rooms. And so that small subset of the larger Black maternal health issue, that pregnancy after loss, that lack of knowledge around what our experience is like, is where my research centers.
I love that, because when people are going through a pregnancy after loss, a lot of research has not been shown, especially around Black and brown birthing people, about just how they navigated the anticipatory grief that they may experience, and really what their lived experiences are as they even navigate the healthcare system through a pregnancy after loss. Because I think people are starting now to really explore the other options of getting away from this, medicalized system, and possibly exploring options around birth centers and even home births. But, even that's risky, even that's costly for a lot of people. And, unfortunately, many people have to continue to rely on the system that is hospitalized. But what I love about the research that you're doing, it's really going to center us and ensure that our lived experiences are a part of that and are central focus to exactly what a lot of Black and brown women are facing every single day as they navigate through loss, through infertility, and really just try to, come out of it with the baby in their arms and healthy and happy themselves. So I would love for you to talk about any resources. What are the things that you are providing clients to help them really navigate their journey after loss?
Yeah, so there's a couple of resources I think that are good for anyone to consider. And then I can talk specifically about the work that I do in my practice. And so I think overall, I'm really... especially for parents who have had experiences of loss and they are affiliated with a certain religious identification, I think it's really important to hold space for the spiritual questions that come up for people after they've lost their baby. Why would God allow this to happen to me? Why my baby, God? And then people's response of, well, God doesn't make any mistakes. That's something that many of my clients who identify as Christian often wrestle with. So in my practice, and I encourage any woman who's had loss to find a place to sit with spiritually, how are you making sense of this? One resource that I offer my clients who are Christian is this book that was so helpful to me. I'll Hold You in Heaven by Jack Haysford. And in the book, he really talks about some of these misconceptions and these just cliches that people give you after you've lost your baby about what happened and the way that we view God's role in that. And that can be so helpful to unpack some of that. I also think it can be really helpful for Black women to be open to the variety of ways in which we can experience healing. And so that includes more formal experiences like a therapist, but there's also these other ways of healing that can be so good for us in our bodies. And so in my practice, I encourage a lot of this, and that includes things like herbal medicine. And I'm looking at the ways in which herbs can be healing for your body and for your emotional well-being too. So that certain teas, as a doula, I might make those teas for my clients, or I might show them where to purchase that as their therapist. Also looking at things like certain types of therapies or supportive modalities that are not considered the norm or traditional. So I sought out hypnobirthing to help really be calming my body during my fourth pregnancy. And that's something that I really encourage people to do. If you're going to get childbirth education, be looking into mindful childbirth education, using mindfulness or hypnobirthing, which incorporates hypnosis or self-hypnosis, so that you can be calming your body in ways that are different than just talking. Talking is great, but as a therapist, I know that I need to really help your body calm itself. And you already have the internal abilities to do that. In my therapy, I use techniques like EMDR or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. And I want to be trained in some other modalities that really help your body pull on its natural healing system. And so those are some things that I do. I also am a Reiki practitioner. And so a lot of my moms are really anxious, and Reiki has been shown to offer some reduction in experiences of anxiety and mood challenges, even during pregnancy. And it's a very gentle way of using energy healing for that. So I incorporate that into the work that I do. And then there's support groups in general. So even talking with the individual therapist can be great, but I think there's really something powerful about healing in community. So I'm giving my clients Sister-in-Law's podcast. I'm giving them groups like Janae Hopgood's work in Black Angel Moms. I refer people there at least once a week. But any sort of group that can be helpful. There's a lot of great groups that are in person. In the Philadelphia area, we have Unite at Lincoln Hall Hospital. There's Compassionate Friends, which is nationwide. That's for people who have lost children of all ages. But I personally attended Compassionate Friends, and there were other people there who had infant loss and baby loss. And I really resonated with the feelings. And it felt so good for me to hear someone who had lost a child who was 40 years old. They had the same emotions I did. It felt so validating to hear, I actually did lose a child. That's what is happening for me. So I encourage people to be in connection with other people who are grieving in the way that they are, because that support is so important. And then I also do, for folks who can handle, feel like this is helpful for them, that research piece. So we're already online looking up a million and one things. That's something I try to help my parents manage their anxiety around, because of all the things you can find online. But I help people get in contact with organizations that might offer them opportunities to help heal themselves by healing others. So in those support groups, maybe you can talk to others. Some moms really get a lot of healing from advocacy work. So do you want to volunteer for Postpartum Support International? Do you want to volunteer for Return to Zero and doing work with their organization? Do you want to be interviewed on Sisters in Loss? Like I encourage them to think of ways that they can use their story to help others. And in that they find their healing. So those are some resources that I like to encourage in my practice, and I encourage for everyone.
Perfect. I love that. I love it. It's so much support that's there online and definitely in person. And I love all the resources that you dropped for everybody. So definitely go follow all those organizations, get in their Facebook communities and engage as another resource for you, because you'll find something different in each of those groups and each of those organizations. So I would love for you to leave our listeners some encouraging words, you know, as we are still in the pandemic and it's still a time of uncertainty. You know, a lot of people are wrestling with, should I get this vaccine? Should I not get this vaccine? Should we try again? You know, should we go through this fertility cycle? And it's still very much so up in the air for people. And we're all still experiencing, you know, some form of collective trauma. So I would love for you to leave the listeners some encouraging words as they navigate what this next year may bring for them.
Yeah, thank you, Erica. And I'm so glad that you brought up COVID-19, because it seems to me that the world has decided it's over, at least in America. And we're like, okay, no masks and go outside and everything is fine. And I'm like, hey, we still need to heal from this collective trauma that we've been through, even if the infectious disease part is more under control. But the words that I want to leave listeners with today is something that I say often to my clients, and I repeat it to myself also frequently, is to be gentle, to be curious and to be open with yourself and your journey. So to really be gentle with yourself around, this is hard. What you're going through is hard. None of these decisions are easy. And we're in the middle of a pandemic. So some days things are going to seem clear, and other days you're going to feel like you're full of anxiety or you're unsure. And be gentle with yourself, because I find that often what we do is we blame ourselves. Oh, I'm just being too nervous, or I just need to think differently, or I need to stop, or I'm such a, you know, a worry wart. And people say that to us. Stop worrying. You're going to hurt the baby. Don't think like that. And I say, be gentle with yourself. You went through a trauma. We have lived through a collective trauma. And so just be gentle around that this is going to be tough, and have compassion for yourself. The other thing to be curious about is to be curious about what is happening for you. Sometimes we just go through the motions and we don't even realize that this has impacted us. And that this loss experience has impacted us. I've had some moms who have had an early miscarriage, and they say, well, it doesn't impact me anymore. I'm fine. I don't think about it. And everyone has different levels that it impacts them. And that's totally fine. But be curious about the way in which in your subsequent pregnancy, it might show up unexpectedly, that something is bothering you and you can't quite put your finger on why something is bothering you so much. Be curious about what that is, because it very well could be something that is living in your body that you haven't had a chance to acknowledge. Be gentle with yourself about it, because our society tells us to just keep pushing. So we often don't think about the ways in which things might be happening for us. And also be curious about alternatives. Some of my families are so focused on one outcome. I need to have another baby in this way, at this hospital, and with this doctor. And sometimes I just like to encourage them to just be curious about what might it be like for some aspect of this to be different. What might it be like to experience something a little with a different doctor or in a different birth setting, or maybe not a baby this year, maybe you try again in next year. So to be curious about the different ways in which things can happen for you, and to be open to all the ways in which your journey will progress. There's some aspects that might be easier than you anticipated. Some aspects may be harder. Be open about the ways in which you can find healing. Be open about the ways in which you might try out something different in your birth journey. But through all of that, be gentle with yourself, because this is a process. It's a journey. It's a marathon. It's not a race that you just do one and done and you're over with quickly. Hold space for yourself and show love to yourself as you're gentle, curious, and open on this process.
Absolutely love it. So where can our listeners connect with you after this episode? Definitely leave all your website, your doula practice, all of the details.
Yeah, thank you. So folks can connect with me on Instagram. I am at s.w.doula. And on Facebook, I am at Shauna M. Williams, LCSW. My website is www.mymysw.doula.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Shauna, for sharing your story and all of your knowledge on the podcast. It has been a blessing, and I know people will definitely benefit from it.
Thank you so much for holding this space for me, Erica, and for every mom that has been through this journey. Your work is a true blessing. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. For show notes, go to sistersinloss.com. To stay connected with us and join the Sisters in Loss community and receive my weekly newsletter, please go to sistersinloss.com/newsletter. That is sistersinloss.com/newsletter. Please rate and review this episode, and I will talk to you next week.